Hey everyone, Professor Z here. It's been a couple weeks since the last podcast. You know, it's 2020, a lot of things are happening. That kind of goes without saying these days. Anyways, I finally got the chance to sit down with someone who I asked to do an interview at the beginning of the semester, but our schedules just didn't work out very well, and we finally were able to hook up and record this interview. We're going to hear about his journey. He originally went to Penn State for fencing, was in the science field, and then decided to leave there, come to Sacred Heart, still in the fencing program. We have a little debate about which is the better weapon, because I still think it's the epee and he thinks it's the foil, but that's a debate we can talk about for a long time. But we're going to hear about his photography journey. He's got a great YouTube channel and website that I'm going to put those links in the show notes. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Tomas Keck. So how much? It's light, but it looks gigantic.
It's huge, but it's so fun to use. And the 1DX paired with it is like a dream.
Man, that is a massive lens.
A lot of fun to use. And it's so cool that we have all of this gear that the SCMA has. Like the 1DX is coming in that I don't know when you're going to start issuing them, but oh. I think if there's any student who likes sports photography, they're going to go to town.
I mean, the real plan with those is that we're going to basically create, I want to create a sports photography kit.
Yeah.
So it's not so much, it's not going to be like, you know, a regular Canon Rebel or something where anyone can sign it.
Oh, no. You don't. No.
It's going to be like, hey, we're going to cover a game and one of the students is assigned to it, or it's part of a package or whatever. Cause I want to get with it. I think I've mentioned this before. I want like the 200 to 400 millimeter lens with it.
This guy, wait, I think I had it around.
Yeah, you got it
somewhere. Downstairs. But yeah, the 100 to 400 would be.
Yeah, the 100 to 400 would be a really great lens. And then still 70 200 as well. Cause you know, any good sports photographer always has two cameras on them.
Yeah.
Cause you can't switch lenses fast enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just switch cameras real quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you for being here. I'd like to start. Please tell us who you are and what you do.
My name's Tomas Keck. I am a junior, rising senior next year at Sacred Heart University. I'm in the SCMA program. Very proud to be part of this amazing program. I got to know Keith last year when I first transferred in from Penn State.
Oh, don't talk about me. It's okay.
Yeah. Well, you have to make about you at some point.
No, it's fine.
I'm part of the Division I fencing team here. Yeah, I really like Sacred Heart. It was a great change from Penn State.
Yeah. Well, so what made you leave Penn State to come to Sacred Heart?
Well, it was a couple of reasons. I would say when I went to Penn State, my major was dendrology. I was a tree biology major. And I've always been interested in nature. I've always been interested in the sciences. I love them. And that's part of the reason why I ended up getting into wildlife and environmental photography. But that's besides the point. Anyway, I was in the program and I just wasn't happy. You know, it's one of those things where I've always dreamt of being in the program I was in at Penn State. It was one of the top in the country. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't feel right. I was like, why am I not liking this? Is it my fault? But the longer I was in there, the more I realized that it just wasn't for me. And it was also a dream of mine to be recruited onto the Penn State fencing team because at the time we were number two in the country. I was relatively successful on that team. I earned my varsity letter and I had a couple nice competitions. One of my better results during that time was a bronze medal at the New England Championships, the Pomme de Terre, which also serves as a bit of an international event. So you get people from Canada and South America, and I did very well there. But one of the things, and I don't know how much I should say, the Penn State team had a big political problem. One of the coaches did something very illegal, and it got pretty hairy. And I ended up not liking the program that much because a lot of it had to do with people trying to cover things up, and eventually it didn't work. Eventually word got out of what happened. And you know, I wanted to get out of there. I didn't think it was for me. So when I was looking at other schools and stuff like that, a really good friends of mine, Stuart and Andrew Holmes, they're brothers. They were fencers at Sacred Heart University. They're like brothers to me. They recommended I go to, I at least apply to Sacred Heart and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And I applied and I got in, and I visited when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my future. And I met Professor Falco, who would later become a mentor and a great inspiration of mine. And he gave me a tour. He introduced me to you. I don't know if you remember our first introduction. And I'm like, wow, this is really cool. This is like a thing I never realized how cool this place was. And I never considered Sacred Heart, even though it was right in my backyard. I'm from Fairfield. So that was one of the reasons why I didn't consider it, was it's right there. And growing up, it was always more of like a commuter school. You know, it was a lot smaller, but now we're really starting to become one of the premier places to study communications and film and broadcast journalism in the region. And the rest is history. You know, I got to know a lot of the professors, and I really enjoyed this program so far.
That was a really great backstory there.
I hope I wrapped up in a nice bow.
There is no time. In fact, I forgot to put a timer on this. That's okay. I'll just figure it out. Well, I got the Zoom timer going, I guess. I like to keep track of the time, so I don't like, oh, it's 3 hours later. We should probably end this.
Yeah, no worries.
This is going to be the documentary, Life and Times of Tomas. Yeah, so, I mean, you mentioned the scandal at Penn State. There was, you know, past couple of years, there's been a lot of big scandals at different big universities, so.
Yeah, it's bad, really bad. And a lot of the thing that I noticed was the coaches, they're very decorated, very celebrated. You know, when I went to Penn State, I looked up to these guys because they're the top in their field. And not many people really know like about fencing, but fencing is a relatively widespread sport in the country. It's just not nearly televised as much as any other sport, but it is very competitive. There's a lot of time spent in it. And, you know, when to get into Penn State, I had to actually quit my high school team and go full on training in New York every day after school. Really? To try to, you know, get up there so that I could have the chance of being recruited, and everything worked out. But anyway, not to go too far away from the point, but the coaches tend to get kind of comfy, and there was a lot of moments, mm-hmm. You know, we would notice they'd be drunk and stuff like that. It'd be like crazy stuff. And I'm not going to get too into the stories because I don't know who's going to watch this and then try to message me saying, I need to know more about this, but
you don't go there anymore. You have no obligations.
I have no obligation, but yeah, sometimes they get kind of comfy and they feel like they can kind of push their boundaries a bit. And it can lead to some decisions that aren't the smartest. And in this case, it got them in big trouble where, I mean, this isn't news at this point. You can look it up if you want, but the coach that I was under, what happened was he was drunk and he went on to a flight, and because they were headed to, I believe, a training camp, and he had some very inappropriate contact with a woman next to him on the plane. And it turned to a really big investigation, because what happened was the U.S. head coach for women's saber was sitting behind him and didn't say anything. He ended up getting fired, I believe. And it was up to this vendor, this fencing vendor, who saw what happened to really come forward and report everything. And that's where everything just started escalating. And when we were on the team, we noticed how stressed out the coaches were. We didn't know what was going on. And it was only till that summer where we heard the news, the paper came out with the article, and we read it like just going, oh my God, this is crazy. And there was this, people were saying that, oh, he was going to come back, but he never did. I don't know what he's up to now, but he's not there anymore. And yeah, it's one of those situations where the coaches, they get a little comfy and they push the boundaries.
Well, I think, you know, aside from the coaches stuff, because like you're right, we've heard a lot of stuff that, you know, gymnastics coaches and Ivy Leagues the past couple of years and all that stuff. I think it's more interesting that you had to quit your high school team to go train in order to be good enough to be recruited by a college, which to me, I just feel like that sounds counterproductive, because it's like, okay, you're on a team already, but in order to get to college, like I still believe college should be about education. I don't know. Call me crazy, I guess.
It should be, yeah.
So the idea that in order for you to get recruited into a school, like, you would have to give up, you know, being on the team you're already on to go train with a different coach in order to get good enough to be recruited by them. To me, that just seems seems odd. So mentioned your fencer. I believe I remember, but just what weapon are you again?
I'm foil. So yeah, there's three weapons in fencing.
Daniel. I'm sorry. Epee is obviously the superior weapon.
You keep saying that, but it's not.
It totally is. Because epee is more realistic to what you'd actually use in a real fight. Foil is the training weapon.
They say that, but if you watch any video, foil is so much more athletic and quick, and I would say it requires more skill, but I'd be causing a lot of fights there.
You know, they all have their own skill in different ways.
Hey, Keith, let's put it this way. Generally, historically, people who fence foil, if they decide to fence a tournament in epee, they'll kick a lot of the epee's butts because
foil takes its timing. You have to initiate the move in order for it to count. So there's definitely a lot of more skill in epee and foil. I think maybe that's why I liked epee better, because I'm like, you know what? If I hit you, I hit you. I don't care. I don't, you know, I can let you fall on my sword. Like, you can charge at me. I just move out of the way and go.
No referee needed.
You know, it doesn't matter. It's as long as the light goes off, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You can double out at the end and still win. So I always thought Saber was the craziest one, because I'm like, Saber was always too fast. I'm like, and they already have a point.
Yeah, it's go talk about go. Yeah, like, really? It's Saber. Saber is the weapon that everyone kind of teases that it will break you by the time you're finished with it. Most people I know that fence Saber in college and are retired now, their knees are gone. They can't like bend over. Their backs are all messed up. Like, they have herniated discs and slipped discs. It's just terrible. So yeah, it's like, think of it this way. Like, foil is like kind of the mix between epee and saber, where foil has the same rule saber does, but it has the same type of weapon setup as epee does. Saber, you can hit anywhere on the blade. You can hit the blade where it touches anywhere on the body with any part of the blade on the upper half of the body, and the light will go off. That'll be considered a point.
Correct.
And foil and epee, it's at the tip of the weapon, where if the tip hits, then it's considered a point or an off target or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I look at it, is sabers, you know, on the far end of this side of the spectrum, then there's foil, then there's epee.
Very good. So one more fencing question.
Sure.
Cup or no cup?
No cup.
Oh man. I don't
Which often leads to very regrettable moments.
I will say, because when I was in college fencing, and the coach at the time relayed a story about how one time he was in a bout and his opponent's weapon broke. Like, it hit the floor and snapped, and then the other end came up and stabbed him.
Yeah.
And then after I heard that story, I was like, and we're going to Dick's Sporting Goods and buy a cup right now. And I'll have to say, after I got one, I've had a little bit more confidence in the lane.
And on the strip?
Yeah, I'm in the strip, and I'm not as worried about guarding one particular area anymore. I can feel, if I get hit there, I get hit there. It's not as big a deal as it was before that. So
yeah.
I'm totally advocate of the cup personally. So let's talk about the real reason why we're in school: education.
Yeah.
And it'd be an understatement to say that you are a standout photographer.
I disagree with that, but I appreciate that.
I mean, it's more of the, you have the passion for it. So because you have the passion for it, you take the time with it. It doesn't help. It also helps that you have the gear for it. Mm-hmm. What got you into photography, and particularly nature photography?
Yeah, so it actually, I look at it as, it was a bit of a coping mechanism when I was at Penn State, where I was just not having that good of a time. So I've always been interested in just taking photos with my phone. So I believe it was my sophomore year at Penn State. I was looking into getting a camera. Let's see, I might even have it in here. It's right here. It's called the Canon SL2. It's a Rebel body.
Oh, yeah.
Little guy. You can see it's super tiny. Here it is right here. Tiny little guy. This is my first camera. And I got it with the 18 to 55 millimeter. And I got it to first start taking pictures of fencing stuff. I wanted to take video and take the photos of people, like, you know, frozen in action. And I started my own like little fencing Instagram, account on Instagram, and it gained good popularity. It turned it like all the Olympians started following it, and I started enjoying it. And then I got a little bit of a rush where I'm like, geez, I'm contributing to something here. I really liked it. And during the whole Penn State fiasco thing, though, fencing wasn't, I love fencing. Fencing was so much fun, but I was going, whoa, this is a really messed up situation, because while the investigations were going on, it was very quiet practices. Generally, we had to go, we showed up at like 6:30 a.m. We started fencing at 7, and then we continued practice until later in the morning. And then, once we were done with that, we had a bunch of time. We could use to study or do schoolwork and stuff. But because I didn't really like my major that much, I just wanted to do something else. So I had a camera, and I'm like, I love nature and stuff. Why don't I start taking pictures of nature? And so about, 6 months later or something like that, maybe now I'm putting together my head. I got the camera my freshman year. The following year, I got this guy. This is, it's not here. It's in my other bag. It's the 18 to 400 millimeter Tamron, where it's a telephoto, so I could start taking pictures of birds and wildlife that were very far away. So I started getting really interested in it, and I started taking pictures of wildlife. By the third month, I had an image featured in Tamron's Instagram, which was like, whoa, this is super cool. Look at, this big this big company is sharing my work. That must mean I'm heading in the right direction. When I transferred to Sacred Heart, I'm like, okay, I'm taking a complete 180 here. I'm going to go full in on this camera stuff. And it was a great decision.
It's amazing. It's probably something similar to me. I think you didn't realize it was something that you could even do. Mm-hmm. Like, you like taking pictures, like, but career day in high school, they didn't talk about photographers and videographers and media professionals, about being a lawyer or a doctor or a school teacher or firefighter. Those are an engineer and a programmer. Those are like the things they talk about in career day. They don't talk about the media arts, really.
Yes.
So, and I have, like I said, when I was a freshman, my major at the time was chemistry. Mm-hmm. So I was going to be a chemistry major. I was going to be.
You were in the sciences as well.
I was going to be a high school science teacher.
Wow.
That was my goal, was the high school science teacher or math teacher, one of the two.
Right.
But then college chemistry was a lot harder than high school chemistry. I found out.
Yeah.
Because I don't like to study that much. And the guy who lived in the room next door to me, Matt Norris, who I'm still friends with on Facebook, was in media studies at the time. I was like, oh, what's this? And I discovered it. And I was like, wow, I had no idea that was a thing that I could do. And I just changed majors at that moment. And went from being like a not great student to the dean's list in a year. So
that's awesome. Helps. That's when you know you made the right decision.
Yeah. I went from academic probation to dean's list in 1 year. So
talk about a 180, man.
Well, it's refocusing. Like I said, I wasn't good with homework. So, but finding that passion, and you went to Penn State, you were in a major that you didn't enjoy, and then you found something that you do enjoy. And it's not that science is not something that you're still interested in, because I still love science. Mm-hmm. Now it's a different way to interact with it. You're still involved with nature. You're going out there. You come around. You talk about like the different birds, and you like know all the information and the migratory patterns and things like that.
You have to, because the thing is, and you probably know this more than anybody, with photography and videography, it has the reputation and connotation of being kind of I'm going to go out with my camera and take pictures and stuff. And there's a ton of people in our major that are just like that. They just want to go out and like have a little fun, but there's a lot of grit involved. There's a lot of homework involved. You need to know what you're doing, and you need to go in there with a plan. Like, I think one thing that stuck in my head that Professor Alacoster told me was, he said, going out there and just trying to get the picture is for amateurs. You need to have a plan going in to understand what exactly you're trying to capture. What's your goal? What are you trying to do with your image or your video? And what message are you trying to tell everybody? And that's what kind of defines someone who's successful in the field from someone who's kind of struggling to find jobs and find work and stuff like that. Because videography, being a filmmaker, can be either very lucrative or very like just hard to do, mm-hmm. because it just depends on what connections you form. It depends on who you know. It depends on how many people know of your work and how many people like your work. That's one of the reasons why I started my YouTube channel, was to try to gain a following and help my Instagram, and therefore help other brands look at me and go, oh, wow, Tomas. Yeah, we heard about this Tomas Keck, or they probably pronounced it Thomas Koek. We've heard about this guy.
Well, it's kind of in the middle of your name, so Koek yeah. makes sense.
Exactly. And hopefully they'll read my email when I send it to them. Maybe they'll see through all those emails they ignore from all these people asking for support of projects, they'll see that Tomas or Thomas Koek, and they'll go, oh, I remember that guy's photo. Yeah, I'll read his email, and we'll at least consider supporting him.
Or it works in the other opposite direction. This is something I know you didn't have me for my 102, but something I like to tell everyone is, you're going to be Googled at some point. So whether they looked at that ahead of time or your email comes in and they just do the quick, like, let's see who this person is. And they find the YouTube channel, they find the Instagram, they find whatever, and they find your website because it could be go either way. It could be they just happen to see you. So when the email comes in, they recognize the name, or after that email comes in, they are like, okay, well, let's do our background investigation. And they find all this stuff all of a sudden, and you come up in the Google searches, and now they're like, okay, this person has a lot of bang for the buck already behind them. So, it's very smart to have that web presence out there. And I really encourage anyone that's in the media field, really any field, get that web presence going and make it a positive web presence, As I always advise people to get off all the stuff. I like to do what I call the mom test. If I don't want my mom seeing it, I don't put it online.
Yeah.
If I don't want my mom seeing this Facebook post, I don't post it because she's on there anyways. But even before she was on Facebook, like, I always had that, like, the mom test. If I don't want my mom seeing it, I'm not going to put it up there.
Right.
So that's because people are going to Google you. They're going to research you if they are interested in working with you, and depending what field you're in, it makes a big difference.
No, you're totally right. And you,
because they don't want to hire a drunk fencing coach to do photos. So
yeah, they're not going to do that. That's one thing I'm trying to make sure I do was, I hate to say it, but I look myself up to see what came up, because I want to know if someone looks at my name, what comes up. Mm-hmm. When you look up, who is Tomas Keck? It used to pull up a mini bio for my website, but I edited my website, and now it comes up like when Google has the box and they tell you who the guy is with the picture. Now my old Penn State roster comes up. So I got to try to get it where it goes back to the website. But you hit the nail on the head with like the website, because you want people when they look you up to click on your website and just see this beautiful array of who you are and what you do. Mm-hmm. And I had a Zoom with Professor Gary Russo the other day. We were going over my website, and I was really proud of my website, and I was showing it to people, and I was getting good feedback. And when I sent it to him, he wrote an email back, and he did the classic Russo, giving me a 2-page thing about what to fix and what's good. He's so thorough like that. That's why I ask him for a critique. But he didn't like it at all. He's like, this website doesn't do you justice. And I was shocked. I was totally shocked, because I was talking to all these professors, and I'm like, hey, look at this beautiful website. And they're like, oh, good job, Tomas. And I'm like, oh, pat myself back on the back again. And I show Professor Russo, and he just pummels it. And then I have the Zoom with him, and he explained his points, and he was just 100% right. And what he said was, you nailed down the whole professionalism part, but you forgot to show your soul, show yourself.
Personality,
exactly.
Yes.
Where I was so focused on making it clean and easy to navigate and like nice and neat that I didn't have any more personality. Like, even my bio was written in third person. And partly is because that Captain Gay is the one who wrote it, but I should probably make it first person, so when whoever reads it doesn't think I'm like just jackass, just putting in the third person bio for my own site.
Yeah. If it's on your own site, you should write in first. Well,
It depends.
I always go back and forth on it because I've done it both ways myself on my own site, where sometimes I write it in third person, sometimes I write it in first person. You know, I respond to clients' emails, and sometimes I say we or sometimes I say I, because it's like, oh, you know, I'm a business, but I'm only one person.
Well, we is very different from saying, you know, Tomas Keck is da 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 da. That just looks like, you know, what? You know, what are we doing? If I were to use we, I would probably have gotten better perception from Russo.
Well, I mean, but it's smart that you're shopping it around, having different eyes look at it, especially people like Russo. Like you said, he is very detail oriented, and he has that eye to see things that other people aren't going to see. So, yeah. You know, you're going to get a different response from him than you're going to get from like Falco, because they're looking for different things too. And Golda and I are going to give you a different outlook on it as well. My big thing about websites is that I have two things. I want people to see the content very easily, and I want them to be able to get in contact with you very easily.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my two. Whenever I advise on websites, like the first thing that someone should see is your best work. Like when they click on that link to go to your website, boom, it should be a photo, it should be a video, whatever it is, but it should be the first thing on the first page. And you can put your bio and stuff buried somewhere else, because if they're hooked, they're going to go find it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to go find it if like the first thing you're talking about is yourself. The first thing that you want to wow them to get them to stay.
Yeah. And you can vouch me on this. It's sometimes you got to figure out what type of website you're making. Like it's very different if someone like Jimmy Chin, who's an award-winning photographer, who's won an Oscar, makes a website versus someone who's just starting their photography business making a website. Someone like Jimmy's established. People probably know who he is before they click on his website. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a little bit different. So he can like get away with making it third person, for example, because
someone else made it.
Exactly. Because someone else made it. That's the gist.
If you are award-winning photographer, Oscar winning, whatever, you're not making your own website at that point.
No,
you're gonna have someone that does that.
Take care of it.
you got someone that's doing that. But when you're starting out, you're making everything yourself these days, especially because it's so easy to do, anyways.
Right.
But like I said, the first thing you want to wow people. The second thing is you want to have it. You know, there should be an email link up here. There should be a contact us over here. You know, there should be like three different buttons on the first page for them to, if they want to email you, if they want to text you, if they want to call you, if they want, I don't care how they want to get a hold of you. Let them get a hold of you.
Right.
I think that's one of my big things is like, don't dictate to people how they can reach out to you. Just let them reach out to you.
Yeah. That's a great point.
I do the same thing with when people want to pay me money. I'm like, I don't care how you want to pay me. I will take the money.
Yeah. Venmo, check, who cares?
Check, Venmo, PayPal, Cash App.
Yeah.
You know, just send it to me. I don't care. As long as I get it. Honestly, though, I hate check the most nowadays because it's the most. Cash is probably the worst. Anything that makes me actually have to go to the bank takes me more time.
Really? That makes sense.
Even though, like, when I have to with PayPal, it's going to take a fee when I charge a client, but at least it's already in my bank.
And Venmo will take a couple of days, but at least it's hands off.
Right.
It's gonna end up in there somewhere or another. There's less time you have to spend managing stuff.
All my payment stuff is automated. It's like it sends out the invoice to them. They pay. It ends up in my account, and then later on I transfer it. You know,
mm-hmm.
I've gone months before, but like, man, I think I should have more money in my bank account. Then I'll open up PayPal. I'm like, oh, it's because I haven't transferred any of my money in like 4 months. I've just been collecting payments from people, but I haven't moved it. There in PayPal, which is fine. I still have it, and it.
Right.
Who cares if it takes 2-3 days to transfer? It's still there.
You know what I'm trying to figure out right now is Google AdSense, because I recently, about a month ago, I started monetizing my YouTube channel.
Yep.
So like they like operate in such like a weird cycle where if I had registered for the monetization 2 days earlier, I would have been paid by now. But I have to wait an extra like 20 days because it was like outside their weird cycle of checking accounts and making sure there's no,
right.
no view got, fraud and stuff like that.
Yeah, verify you and everything and make sure you don't have a robot viewing all your YouTube things, all that.
Yeah.
But at least you got to, your channel's gotten to the point where you can monetize with it, which is great.
I'm stoked. We're on an upward trend right now. So
what's the name of your YouTube channel?
Tomas Keck.
Tomas Keck. Okay.
Yeah. It used to be Wild New England. Then it was Kamerhoot. Then I'm just like, I just have to make it my name. Yes. I don't want people to be attracted to a brand that I made. I want them to be attracted to me as a brand, you know, and I'm sure you can agree with me on that. I did a complete rebranding like a week ago, switching all my accounts to my name, and nothing like Owl Guy 66 or any of that. You know,
no, it just sounds weird, Owl. I mean, it all depends on what you, if everything you're doing is you, then yes, it makes sense to be you. First of all, anyone that shops on Amazon, I recommend going to smile.amazon.com, because then the proceeds of your, you get choose the charity, but every time you purchase from Amazon, part of your purchase goes to a charity of your choosing when you do smile.amazon.com.
Oh, wow.
And you can also set up your Amazon app on your phone to do it as well. So like when I purchase things, it goes to Habitat for Humanity of Fairfield.
So how does it work? How do you get paid?
So Amazon Associates, though, if you sign up as an Amazon Associates program, basically when you do a gear review, you get a customized link from Amazon and put it in your description underneath your YouTube video. So that way you'd be like, oh yeah, there's links to in the description below to all the products I'm talking about today. And if someone purchases it using that link, you get a percentage of that.
That's really smart. The only problem I'm going to run into, that's something I definitely want to look into, but the only problem I'm going to run into is a lot of my gear reviews, they're sponsored by Milford Photo. So that would be a problem, because I want them to be directed to Milford Photo and not Amazon, right?
Well, so it depends on what you do. If it's a Milford Photo thing, then obviously you're not going to do the Amazon thing.
Right.
I probably wouldn't.
No, that would be very bad.
But Milford Photo is sponsoring you. This podcast sponsored by Milford Photo.
Yeah.
Not really. They're not paying me anything. I don't get money.
Have you met those guys? The owner, Jesse, he's a real nice guy.
I haven't been there in a couple of years, actually. I bought my Canon 60D from there.
60D.
So that's 6 or 7 years ago.
Wow.
Because I don't even have that camera anymore.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, speaking of YouTube, one little problem, or not a problem, just like a thing I got to get past, is I'm trying to get it so people watch my videos, not because of the gear I'm interviewing, but because of me. You see the problem there? It seems like a lot of people, they'll look up a camera model, right? Mm-hmm. I want to find a Canon 90D. There's a whole list of people reviewing it. They'll click on the most popular one. But someone like Peter McKinnon has subscribers who will flock to Peter McKinnon's Canon 90D review video, because they like his input.
I think it takes time.
It takes a while. Yeah.
Because like I'll, from my own experience, when I'm looking up reviews online, and I'm searching for like lighting gear or whatever, because I went down a 2-day lighting gear thing in the last 2 days. And I end up going, there's a couple people that I end up like enjoying more because they're, you know, their pacing of how they talk about it, it's more.
Who are your favorites?
It's I don't even know their names sometimes. It's like, you know, you gotta make me go on my YouTube.
Oh, please. I'm really curious, because I have a group I tend to watch.
Let's go see my history. Well, currently I've been looking at a lot of smart home devices today, so that's not helpful.
Have you seen Chelsea and Tony Northrup? This isn't going to be very interesting for the viewers. But
no, I have not. Where is this? Where is it? Oh, this guy was pretty good. Oh, New Layer is the name of the channel. But where is it? That guy was not good. although I didn't enjoy this one channel, I didn't enjoy the way he presented it. I enjoyed the information he gave, which is weird.
How many subs?
DSLR Video Shooter. That's the one.
How many subs does he have?
240,000.
Wow. So he's got that plaque.
You know, he's got a lot of subs, but it's very much in-depth stuff. Like I looked at a couple years ago, he did three different series, like LED lighting for under $50, between $50 and $100, between $100 and $200. And he would like in each video compare 10 different lights and show the CRI ratings. You know, you show it yourself. Like, here's the white card. Here's the color card. Here's what the white light looks like. So it's just is the kind of detail I'm looking for.
Yeah.
But also, the thing that will turn me off from a YouTube video the most and make me click on the next one, if it's a 10-minute review video and the first 3 minutes are talking about what they're gonna review before they get to it, I'm already somewhere else.
I see.
I don't need a 3-minute video intro about you before I watch the information. Like, I'm purely going for the information.
Yes.
Personally, you know, if I'm watching a review video, I want the information. So
you don't need the romance of it.
Right. Your personality could be in there.
Yeah.
Your personality should be throughout the whole thing, but you'd be like, hey guys, today on XYZ show, we're going to talk about the Canon 1D blah, blah, blah. Quick little 5-second video clip, you know, intro segment. All right, guys, here it is. The brand new, you know, hey, I'm so-and-so and here's the thing. And we'll start talking about it. I don't need the 2 minutes, blah, blah, blah. And if you have a sponsor, drop the sponsor in the middle. Don't drop the sponsor in the beginning. or if you got the sponsor, be like, hey, today's episode is brought to you by, you know, XYZ soda, blah, blah, blah. Make it 5 seconds, make it 10 seconds. Don't go on for a minute talking about how great this product is because I'm already gone. Mm-hmm. I'm already zoned out. Mm-hmm. That's me. I don't know. Some other people are different about that because, you know, I probably watched 20, 50 different videos about lights in the last 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
It's all because B&H had sales. But then I missed the sale and I ended up buying stuff that wasn't even on sale anymore.
Right, right.
But they're cool, cheap RGB lights. But
do you want to hear a moral dilemma that I faced a couple weeks ago?
Always.
So I have a video on my YouTube channel. It's a sound mix. It's like a soundtrack mix. I made it 2 years, about 2 years ago. And I made it was from my favorite movie, Last of the Mohicans. And I layered 3 different soundtracks on top of each other. And I just put it on YouTube because I didn't want to have to pull up a download on my phone because I wanted to listen to it when I was studying. So anywhere I can go, I could pull my favorite mix that I made up and I could listen to it. A few weeks later from me posting it 2.5 years ago, it had like 1,000 views. And I'm like, whoa, that's kind of cool. About a couple months later, it had 10,000 views. And I'm like, wow. Well, lo and behold, as of today, it has, let's see, we'll do a little drum roll or something while I'm pulling this up. It has, what's your guess, by the way? How many do you think it has?
80,000.
17 million.
Wow.
So it gets about 50 to 100,000 views a day. And this is where the moral dilemma comes in. The part of the soundtrack isn't copywritten. It's not copywritten because it is from a part of the track that was never released on the CD. So if I wanted to, I could cut out about 2 minutes on it via the YouTube editor and make about $200 a day from this video. So I had the decision, do I want to do that and get rich fast? Or do I want to, you know, stick with my moral gut and go, this isn't my work. It's not right for me to make money off of it. And I chose that because I'm like, if I had spent all this time rehearsing music and stuff like that, I wouldn't want to, have someone else make money off of it in the distant future. But it's kind of cool to think about. I'm using that as a benchmark now where if I can make that views per day ratio, it could be that much money per day.
Well, it sounds like you would not be a good 1980s hip hop artist.
Probably not.
Because all of that stuff was nothing but remixes of recorded music and they rapped over it. So it's that's a whole nother debate because in some sense, it's like, even though you took someone else's work, you still reinvented it into your own.
Right.
So there's a whole idea about remixing where you take pieces out there and then you're reassembling them.
Keith, I made it. I made it. So I would be a good, artist, but I wouldn't make any money off of it because I wouldn't claim it as my own.
Oh yeah. But my most views is 10,000. So
that's pretty good. 10,000 is a lot of views.
And that was on a tutorial on how to use a soundboard.
Think about how many people 10,000 is.
Yeah. I have 5,000 views on that little Tascam microphone you showed me before. I created a video for that. Almost 5,000 views for that.
That's really good. That's really good.
I just need
I'm trying to picture 5,000 people in a football stadium. That's a lot of people that watch that video trying to gain that knowledge that you bestowed onto the internet.
You're not wrong. It's just, you know, you now need 4,000 required watch hours. I feel like that went down.
What went down?
The required watch hours before you can be a paid channel. That was 10,000.
Well, you need a certain 1,000 subscribers too.
1,000 subscribers, I know.
1,000, yeah.
Hey, I'm a long way from that because it's my educational channel. So,
hey, man,
it's what I make for the students. And like, until I start requiring everyone to subscribe to it, it's gonna be a while before I get there.
Dude, to get an A, you have to subscribe to the channel.
Yeah, right. And I have a moral dilemma with that because I don't believe that you should. Because I had a problem like that once. I had a teacher in grad school who they had made a documentary, and they were, of course, trying to promote the documentary. And this professor made everyone in the class like it and write a review about it on Facebook. And I just had like a moral dilemma with that because
it's a little weird. You're
basically trying to inflate the viewership and the reviews of it with your students. And I'm like, like you said, moral dilemma, that to me is ethically wrong.
Very wrong. And I'm sure you've heard about all those Instagram apps you can get to give yourself more likes.
Yeah, so I don't do any, I barely use my Instagram anyways. The only time my Instagram gets used is like when I'm shooting a wedding, and I haven't shot a single one this year. So, you know, 2020 and all.
Yeah, which sucks.
I've turned down like some people like, hey, I'm like, no, I'm not even going to do it. Sorry.
Yeah, you were telling me that like it's a bit of speaking of dilemmas, it's another dilemma. You know, you can make good money or you can be safe. And the right decisions to be safe. Like the viewers don't know this, but I had COVID a couple of weeks ago, probably about a month ago now. And it's no cakewalk. And I consider myself to be pretty healthy. I exercise, I eat well, but it hit me pretty hard. And it was really scary because I didn't want to give it to my family.
Mm-hmm.
That was a real stress point for me. I couldn't give a, excuse me again for the French, but I couldn't give a shit about what my own health was as long as I didn't spread it onto my parents, who I was trying so hard not to get it for that very reason. That was the situation. And COVID's dangerous because I was super careful and I still got it. If you like make your boundaries a bit bigger, the chances of you getting it just keep increasing that much more. And what happened was, you know, I had practice and I tried to stick with a certain group of people so that because I'm going to school, I'm going to be interacting with all these sorts of different people. But if I make it so it's a set number, the chances of me getting COVID are going to go down. Well, what happened was it got breached where one of the people in that group got COVID from somebody else and they passed it on to me by mistake. So it's just one of those situations where you have to just play it smart. And I think you really did play it smart with turning down those offers.
Well, I mean, most of the ones I had this year were all postponed to next year.
Oh, so that money's still there.
Yeah. There was only one I turned down because I also freelance for another company. Where basically I just go and shoot the weddings and send them the videos, which makes it really easy for me because it's just, you know,
no editing. It's you just
no get editing. I go and record it, then I upload it to their Dropbox account, and I get
paid. People don't appreciate us for that reason, Keith. They think we show up, we take our little pictures with our cute little camera, and the photos just magically appear. The amount of editing, the amount of hours,
$10,000 on my back.
yeah. The amount of hours you spend, the amount of money that you spend on the equipment. Coupled with the fact that you're running around the entire event trying to get all the photos and all the video material is just,
let me tell you, I bought a new camera. So I never, every year I always buy like in December, I was like, okay, this is my last purchase for the year. Like you know, what do I have left in the bank? Buy something else just to get on, you know, taxes and whatnot. So I actually sold a lens and then bought the new GH5. Well, it wasn't the new at the time, but I bought myself a new GH5. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't shoot anything this year. Well, I shot stuff with it, but not anything I got paid for. And then I also bought a new monopod too, because I found this brand. I was like, you know, again, deep dive on YouTube, finding different reviews. And this one guy who does, it's like a wedding film school, I think is the name of the YouTube channel. He reviewed this one monopod. I was like, that looks sweet. And of course it was back ordered because China was shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually took like 5 months for me to get it. Didn't matter, but it's cool because it instead of having a different lock points, it just in the center has a twist grip. So you release it and then it telescopes out in both directions and you lock it again.
That's smart.
So it's a one-handed twist it, extend it, twist it again, and you're done. So you don't have to like move anything around to make it taller or shorter. And it's got it's a much wider base because it has the feet that spread out, but it's much wider than other ones like a Manfrotto. So you can hold, you know, like my camera I could just put it on there and let it go. It's like almost like a tripod. It just falls, no one knocks it. But so I bought those things and then I didn't shoot anything. So I had one wedding was still on my books as of a month and a half ago, and it was actually a week from now. And so I was like, all right, things are okay. Right at the time when I was thinking about this, things weren't so bad as they are now. And so I get the details for because like when it's the freelance thing, I don't get the day of details until like about a month and a half out. So mm-hmm. I get them and I'm looking at them. I'm like, so the first of all, it's in Rhode Island. So it's a 2-hour drive to get there. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, let's look at the, you know, it's only 50 guests. Fine. Let's look at the venue. Venue is pretty big, 50 guests. That should be okay. I'll stay masked, whatever. But then I looked and they wanted video of the bride getting ready at the hotel room. Mm-hmm. That's where I just drew the line right there. Like, there's no way you're going to get me to go and sit in a hotel room while people get hair and makeup done for an hour. Because I've done plenty of weddings where they're getting ready in hotel rooms. Hotel room windows generally don't open. And if they do, they don't open very much. There's usually a lot of people in those situations. And even if it's only the bride, one other person, the makeup artist, myself, and the photographer, that's still five people in a very small space. The bride's not going to have a mask on because she's getting makeup done, or whoever else is getting makeup or their hair, you know? So I'm like, so I ended up like writing the company I was going to work for, wrote this email about, you know, I don't feel comfortable doing this.
Where was this wedding going to be?
It was in, I think it was in Providence. Was in Providence? It was in Rhode Island. I forget what town now. But they were like, fine, you know, we'll get. And I was also like, you know, it's not my primary job, so I don't need the money as much as other people do. So if you want to, you know, throw it to a different video person, and I need to pass because I just can't do it.
Right.
I imagine at this point it might be canceled anyways, but I just, I'm like, I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully by the time we get to April, things are going to be better because my niece is getting married in April. And then next week I have two weddings after that. So
sweet.
Cross the fingers. Well, my wife is getting the vaccine next week. So
no way.
Well, she's a medical worker.
Wow.
So they actually, cause she works for a hospital and everyone, is eligible to get it when it's available.
How much how do you think we're going to be going back to normal in like January?
No.
Okay, that's what I thought, but I wasn't aware the vaccine was being distributed like next week.
It's well, it hasn't been officially approved by the FDA just yet. But basically all the medical facilities are planning for it and they have mm-hmm. All the distribution is already getting ready to go. They're just waiting for the yes. So that way they can just pull the trigger and the planes go and they start distributing it. But the problem is it's a two-part vaccine. So you got to get one dose and then 4 weeks later you get the second dose. And, you know, they're only going to have, 40 million doses in the first month. So that's really only 20 million people that can get it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be healthcare workers and senior living homes. That's like the first, or, you know, nursing homes.
Right.
First wave. So it's really not going to be, unfortunately, I don't think, like, for school wise, I don't think we're going to be back to quote unquote normal until next fall.
Wow. What do you think about sports?
Oh, sports is just a mess. Ethically, I don't think we should be playing them.
We are supposed to have a meet February 7th. And I'm a little bit nervous about that. I don't know how I feel about that.
Right. I mean,
I want to get back to fencing really, really bad.
That's the thing. As an athlete, I understand, like, you want to do the thing, especially in college. You have a limited amount of time to be that athlete. It's not like you're a pro where you're like, you know what, we can just take this year off and do it again next year.
You know, what's funny is people go to me and they go, oh, you, Tomas, you already had COVID. You're immune now. And I'm like, am I? There's studies coming out.
Sure.
Yeah, the study's coming out that you're not as immune as people think they are. That doesn't even make any sense. You're not as immune as people thought you once were after you get COVID, because there have been people that have gotten a different case of COVID. It wasn't their old COVID coming back.
Right.
So I don't want to risk that.
Yeah, it's too new. The science is too new. You don't want to take that chance. I know our men's and women's basketball team they've been postponed because people on staffs had COVID, but they are supposed to be playing next week.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see, you know, it's one thing.
You don't want to sound insensitive, but at the same time, it's kind of insensitive to act like COVID doesn't exist.
Right. And, you know, I have a student in my podcasting class doing a story with his friends that play for, you know, Big Ten football teams, and how, you know, each week the roster is different because, you know, a quarter of the players have COVID or are quarantined. And I'm like, and I said early on in this, I'm like, thank God I work for a school that doesn't rely on sports income.
That's Penn State. That was Penn State.
Yeah, we're not Notre Dame. We're not Penn State.
Yeah, like the fencing team was treated like gods at Penn State. When we like other sports, we'd get so much apparel. We'd have our own building to study. You know, the whole building was renovated and like totally new, built from the ground up. With the amount of clothing and gear I have in storage now is kind of crazy. We'd get, as far as clothing and stuff goes, because the sports gear, you get all that. But as far as like regular just walking around clothing goes, you'd get everything from the underwear and the socks all the way up to like big, thick winter parkas and two pairs of sweatshirts and all sorts of stuff. That's the one thing I miss. We called it Nike Christmas, where we'd come into practice and they'd have the long table laid out with just all the stuff. And you get into the line and you'd walk along the table grabbing four t-shirts that are all different and two sweatshirts that are different, a windbreaker, a parka, and all that stuff. So,
but we can't pay athletes, but we can give them a lot of free swag, right?
I know. We got a ton of swag, and that's what it's about. And you know what the funny part is, when you have that sort of setup, the athletes, we all feel good because we feel like we're professional. We feel like we're pro athletes, which in a sense we kind of are. We're competing at the highest level, but all that is kind of masked by the fact that, you know, we're also kind of getting screwed with NCAA. You know, it's a lot of just, they want to make us feel good so that we don't see the actual logistics of the situation. You know what I mean? I feel like Sacred Heart does a really good job of taking care of the athletes, but not like giving us like a throne to just sit on. That's the one thing at Penn State. I don't know. I haven't seen that much of this in Sacred Heart. But at Penn State, when you walk into the academic building, like you'd sit down with a group of guys there's a lot of systematic cheating that goes on. There's a lot of tests that get handed around in the academic building. And whether the advisors were aware of that or not, I feel like a lot of people just kind of turned a blind eye. But don't quote me on that. But there's a lot of screwy situations that would happen. And I'm very proud of this. I hate cheating. I think it's like the worst thing that you can do for yourself. It's mm-hmm. not about the other people. It's for yourself. You're cheating yourself out of something that is very productive. So I hated that. And so, that was just something that happened. But at Sacred Heart, everything is a lot smaller. There's not as much like, you're not treated like a god. So you're not allowed to think that you're a god. You see what I'm saying?
I do. I mean, as a former student at Sacred Heart myself, you know, it's not like I could go through at the time. I didn't know who the quarterback was, kind of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. they're not walking through the hall, but like, oh, look at this. You know, it's a different culture where, you know, sports is a big deal, but it's also not the biggest deal. You know what I mean?
You've got to do something after you stop playing sports.
Right.
And and you don't want to peak during your college. There's so many people who go college was the best 4 years of your life. It shouldn't be because of the accolades you received. You should start getting all those accolades later in life, and you should still be trying to get something. You should still be hungry for something else.
I have to say, if you think the college is the best 4 years of your life, then the rest of your life is going to be very disappointing.
Yeah.
You know, college is great. It's a lot of fun. But like you said, you're not going to play sports forever, especially if you're going to like if you're going to Sacred Heart, the chances of you becoming a pro athlete, you know, I like to say, yeah, we're D1.
We've got our stars.
We're D1 yeah. AAA, you know. We've had a couple of people go to the NFL, but we're not going to be, first round recruits and stuff like that. You know, you're not going to hear on Sunday morning when they're doing lineups, like, linebacker from Sacred Heart University, you know.
And being a professional fencer is not really an option unless you're top 10 in the country.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. The money in that's not there, even though it's the fastest sport in the world.
we're not fast enough to run away from financial problems.
No. It's also an expensive sport to be in.
It's so expensive. Like each foil costs like $150. And, that breaks, every, month or so. So, and you need to have around 5 per competition. So you can do the math. That's just the foils, the whites, all together. If you get FIE equipment, which is what I tend to wear, will cost combined about $1,000. And then the mask, is another like $400. So it's so expensive. That's the one thing that you really, that as a fencer trying to get recruited, I wanted to get recruited to a program where I wouldn't have to pay any of that anymore. Everything would be given to me. That helped a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it is super expensive to have all that stuff. And that's what people, I think, don't understand sometimes, but that's why Sacred Heart, we academics first. I've never heard of any cheating rings like you're talking about Penn State. I'd have never seen that myself. You know, I'm sure like you can never stamp out cheating everywhere. There's always going to be a little bit here and there. Everyone cheats on something, but it's not like an organized effort and people are,
it's not like the teams walking around together talking about, okay, we got to prepare to cheat for this test in a week.
Right.
Why don't you study instead?
That's true.
For most part, most people like that are going to have, it's going to bite them in the butt sooner than later. You can't think about, this is one of my favorite lines from an old mentor of mine from Penn State. His name was Dr. Kim Steiner. I worked on some publications and some research with him. I was talking to him about cheating in students, and I said, oh, well, it'll all come back to them. Karma comes back. And he goes, well, not always. And I said, okay, but then what's the point? He goes, well, you don't not cheat because, what did he say? I'm not going to quote this to its full justice, but the way he put it was, it matters more of you just doing it for yourself. Some of those cheaters are going to get by. Some of those cheaters are going to be very successful, but they're always going to be a little bit flawed. They're going to be a little bit calloused in the sense where they're going to have a bit of a chip on their shoulder where they know they didn't make it, as well as the person next to them who didn't cheat. And you know that. So that's something that you got to hold to your own self. And that's why I said earlier, not cheating is not about following the rules, which it is, but it should be about just following your rules and your own moral compass. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. I'm gonna switch topics because we're hitting about an hour here, and I totally have glossed over big topic that I wanted to bring up is that your upcoming trip to the north.
Oh yeah, very excited about that. It's gonna be two trips. So we got one to Maine, and then another one to Minnesota. The one to Maine.
Oh, you're going to Minnesota now too.
Yes. So the reason why I'm going to Minnesota was, and I'll preface this to viewers who don't know, I'm doing this trip to make a film about great gray owls, which are one of the rare species of owl. We're going to be, it's in collaboration with the National Audubon Society and the Boreal Conservation Committee. And we're doing it because it's a big hot topic on, conservation, where these owls are very reliant on the climate and habitat. And unfortunately, whether you believe it or not, the climate is changing and the habitat is declining. So we're meeting with some of the top scientists in the respective fields through the National Audubon Society and the Boreal Conservation Committee, and now through the Sac Symbol Committee, which is in Minnesota. We're going to be interviewing them about their projects and how they're trying to improve livelihood and for all these different species, and focusing on the great gray owl, because the owl is very dependent on those things. So what we're going to be doing is in early January, I'm going to be going to Maine with Matthew Krecky, also known as just Krecky, who's a good friend of mine, another student here at Sacred Art. He's in the master's program. And I'll also be going with another friend of mine named James Singer, who is a student at University of Rhode Island. He specializes in drone stuff. And we're going to be traveling up there. We're being funded by the Undergraduate Research Institute and the College of Arts and Sciences. And we're also being funded by Tamron Optics and the School of Communications. And we're going to be going up there and shooting a movie, shooting a video, interviewing all these great people. And we're going to make it kind of a fun thing. We're going to try to make it where it's very interactive for the people watching. I'm going to be acting as a host. We're going to be trying to find this owl. And then the Minnesota trip is happening because we were formerly going to be trying to get into Canada. That didn't happen because of COVID. So Minnesota is the next best place where it's a hot spot for those owls. So I'm going in January alone, or maybe with one other person to just at least help me drive if I do end up driving, but I'm probably going to fly anyway. But anyway, I'm going to be going totally up there. At this point. Yeah, right. It's kind of crazy. I'm going to have to dress warm though, because that is, it was the coldest state in the lower 48 last year at negative 50 degrees. Jeez. So I got to be ready. But once that happens, I'm coming back, throwing all this footage together and making a film to try to submit to competitions and stuff, and present at the MAX and at the Undergraduate Research Institute Fair.
Excellent. And don't forget, it's also sponsored by Canon.
Oh yeah. Also sponsored by Canon.
For that, lending the 600 millimeter lens.
That was big for me. And that was a lot of help from Keith. Keith, hey, put in a good word. I'm very happy about that for many reasons. One, because I don't think that we showed it on the camera yet.
I don't know if I'm going to make a video version of this anyways, but that's all right.
Yeah, no worries. But we got the 600 millimeter F4. That's courtesy of Canon. And the reason why that's such a great piece of gear to have is because it's super sharp and it lets in a lot of light, so I can shoot for later. Now I almost was shooting in pitch black the other day, photographing these owls. So I was setting a shutter speed of like 3 seconds. And fortunately, owls stay still when they're like listening. Right. So I was able to get some shots.
That's awesome.
And the other really cool part about this Canon thing is I see it as a foot in the door where now I have a solid contact within Canon to hopefully continue a relationship with them, because I could see myself trying to work for them, or at least working with them on different projects and stuff. Because as much as I am about the documentary stuff, I love gear. So that'd be a really cool thing to see if I can pull that off in the future.
Awesome. Well, Tomas, that's a great way to end it. Thank you again for joining me today.
Of course.
On the podcast. And I can't wait to see what comes of the trips. I would probably drive at this point because I don't want to go to airport at all.
Yeah, it's scary.
Even though apparently the planes are safe, you still have to get on the planes.
Yes.
So
the airports are what I'm more worried about than the planes.
And also with all the gear you're bringing, you know, you just put it in the trunk of your car. It's more secure that way than put on the plane all the time. That's a whole other story.
And what'd you think before we sign off? What'd you think of the shots I sent you with the
one? Those are amazing. The amazing shots.
Those 18 megapixels hold up, man. Yeah, they really hold up when you pair it with some good glass.
You know, 18 megapixels, but still like the sensor is where it's at.
Yes.
You can have all the megapixels in the world. If you don't have a good sensor, it doesn't matter.
Like those phones bragging they have 60 megapixels.
Yeah, like, oh yeah, my little thumbnail size sensor has a billion megapixels. Yeah, but it's still only a thumbnail size sensor.
Yeah, you can forget about dynamic range.
Yeah, and light sensitivity. That's a whole other story. Again, thank you for joining me. I'm going to include and make sure if I don't have them all, send me the links to all your socials and YouTubes. And I'm going to include those in the show notes so that people can check out your work.
Yes, please. Where can I find this podcast?
Oh, don't worry. I'm going to send you the link as soon as it's up.
Sweet.
No, you can never listen to it. It's a secret. It's just for me. I'm going to listen to it at night. No, I'm just kidding. It's going to be out next week.
That sounds cool. I hope some of the professors take a look at it. Do the other professors watch it?
Oh, I don't know. I don't tell them about these things. This is like my fun.
This is you having some fun.
This is my fun podcast, getting to catch up with students and hear about things. You know, like most of the people I've talked to this year were people that I've had as a freshman and now they're seniors. So it's kind of like I like to see the transition and where people are or going. So this is really for my own, part of it's for my own self. What's the word I'm looking for? I can't think of the word.
Not indulgence.
Indulgence, thank you. Yes, it is my self-indulgence. Yeah. That's exactly the word I'm looking for.
Well, Keith, it's great you do this stuff, and I'm probably going to embarrass you, but you're so passionate about what you do, and you put in so much heart into this program, trying to get all the students. You have a very thankless job because so many students like will return kits that are incomplete, and you got to figure out how to, you know, patch up those kits and make sure that the camera is ready to go out the next time. But you do such a great job. Yeah. And we appreciate all the hard work you do. So thank you so much for keeping the gears of SCMA turning.
Yeah, well, you are welcome. Thank you. Thanks once again. And we'll see y'all later. Thanks to Tomas again for joining me on the podcast. That was a great one. And it's probably going to be the last one for 2020, honestly, because students are home. It's winter break. Everyone's enjoying. Right now it's finals week, but soon everyone's going to be enjoying the time off. Look for more great episodes next semester. Again, check out Tomas's work. I'm going to have the links to his website and his YouTube channel in the show notes, so go check out that stuff. It's really great work, and it should be an inspiration for other students that are into photography as well. Thanks again, and have a great holiday season.